today is September 1st, 2014. This is 10 a.m. in the West Coast and 1 p.m. in the East Coast. It's 8 p.m. in the Middle East. This is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today, we can recognize so many events that are happening and unfolding in our world. And one of the things that people are all concerned about is the idea of security, the self-preserving security. Because if anyone wants to do, you know, a wish in their life, they just want to go home and sleep and have their safe haven. And in order for us to have safe havens, we have to have those heroes, those incredible people who take care of business and do the right thing at the right moment. And for that moment, I was so honored to accept my special guest that I heard so much about and I wanted to share with you, Mr. Chuck Brook. Welcome to my show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Orly. I appreciate being on.
Yes, and sir, I was calling upon you because this is a time that everybody's security is in play, and we have to be really, really in high regards to how we appoint ourselves and how we travel. Because, as you know, there were airplanes disappearing and there were bombing in some places. There was war in the Middle East that all of a sudden people vacation time in Israel, which is the most incredible place to vacation when it's fun. You had no-go for many of the tourists. So, you know, coming from your background with this, all the apparatus that you understand, and, you know, it's much too complicated for us to comprehend, what would be the safest way to consider this time, and as far as, you know, security for us all globally? We're talking about, you know, from your perspective, because we take American as the know-it-all. And every time American people come and teach us a lesson, we are welcoming it. So I was thinking, you know, how hard is the work that you guys are doing? How hard is to accomplish what you're doing and preserve? And, you know, since 9/11, thank God we can say that you did good. You guys did wonderful.
But, Orly, I have to say that the most important factor in security for everyone is awareness, and awareness of where your family is, where you have to go in the case of emergency, whether it's being cybersecurity, you know, changing your passwords or being aware of the malware threats, keeping abreast of any warnings in the United States, particularly with the Department of Homeland Security and FBI. They issue regular warnings to law enforcement that are also made public to see what credible threats may exist. And that's the first step, I think, for anyone. You're right, it's a new era. I think in many ways it's more of a security threat than there was after 9/11 because of some of the technological transformations of the global world and largely being communications. Everyone now has access to cell phones, to the Internet, to Twitter, to social media. They're able to organize cells quicker than they were before. It's in every country, and we're fighting an extremist ideology, and we have to all become greater aware of what we need to do, and also become more politically aware of what our leadership need to do to basically take on the threat.
I agree with you, and you know we heard that Britain just issued, you know, all emergency, all higher alert, and for them to issue such an alert is something new because we didn't hear England coming to play in such a force in a long time. You know, American is always on the front line. Israel, of course, is the front line on the war on terror. And in Britain, because of such a you know, crossroad between, you know, Europe and in the Middle East, of course, and such a potential threat that they hold because they have so many residents that are migrating, they're coming and going from Arab countries, they issue a big alert. And I know that the immigration factor is very important, and you know, people want to come to America. And I know that for some reasons, many of you know, the embassies didn't issue visas for a long time overseas in the period of the war, because of Israeli time war here, because I don't know, for so many reasons. But are they winning when they actually you know, create a such a scare that the people don't even welcome? You know, America is the land of opportunity. People want to travel, and if we stop that, we stop the exchange of knowledge, we exchange of commerce. We don't want to give them, you know, that factor, because once they start with ruining the world economy, like they started in 9/11, they can influence world events constantly, and they're running the show as far as we are concerned on the level of threat. I don't know what to say about that as far as you know, your part of the deal, but is that a mass thing that we have to, you know, to be so strongly on immigration and visiting people, you know, tourists?
Well, I think with immigration, it's really a multiple process. One of the things is the better intelligence on who's on a no-fly list, sharing the threat. The other thing is to be realistic. I mean, a country like Israel doesn't pose problems to the United States for immigration, and there should be no reason why there's an inordinate amount of background investigation and stopping of people going back and forth between the two democracies. Europe is more of an issue now because there's people living under passports that travel back and forth to fight for ISIS and other extremist Islamic organizations. So I think, you know, ironically, some of the focus that has been put on by the United States State Department in recent years should be changed, and I think there's voices in Congress on that. And the other aspect of travel, of course, is technology. Security technology. We need to have a higher degree of detection equipment in some airports where people could smuggle on bombs and weapons. Again, you know, maybe a post 9/11 mentality, we've gotten a little lax globally, and there hasn't been as much R&D as needed to get us to the new technologies that we need to be at. So I think you combine that, the intelligence sharing, with real threats of intelligence, and also with new technologies in global airports, you make it safer for everyone to travel anywhere, and it benefits. It's a trade-off between security and privacy, but it's just really a time factor. I think everyone that flies that has no ill intent would be happy to know that no one else on the plane is posing a threat. So I think it's a balance there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, reminding me on the list, when you have a no-flying list, and we in Israel had a situation where the Turks sent a little ship to break the blockage on Gaza. They sent many terrorists on top, and they were holding guns and everything, and the Turkey stopped, you know, talking to Israel. But something we learned from that the next time that they wanted to send the ship, we went and we put the no-fly list of all the participants, and sure enough, Greece stopped them. They stopped all of them before they even boarded the ship. So, I'm sorry. I think that is technique if we work together, because right now we have no luxury of being, you know, intimidated or be shy out of our friendship with the world. We need to join forces on the list of the people that we assign, we work with, and we make sure that if they pose a danger, to keep them offshore. And let's go to a break. And we are back, and that's beautiful songs that I put today. I put today two songs for Mr. Rook in French. French is something that we have to talk about. French is that country that works with America and with Israel, of course, and Western world in a very potential, you know, a very powerful play. And we, for some reason, don't let the French lead the way in Europe. Because we have the Brits that, you know, they are part of the European Union, but to keep the monetary funds, you know, and the coins, they still have the sterling. But France, for some reason, was, when Sarkozy was, they were in play. And for now, after all this mess that we have, Germany is picking up the lead again. And France is calling, you know, where is America? Where is America? We had one of the parliament member screaming in my show, you know, Mr. Habib. He was saying, where is America? And if France needs America back, I think in the war on terror, we need to, you know, maybe hold them closer because they represent a lot. And that's why I put the music. I think that I can create the atmosphere to understand how loved this France to all the world and how the anti-Semitism is rising and how the threat of democracy is there. Sir, do you think that the American can visual the threat of democracy that France is facing right now? Because France, anti-Semitism was not in existence for many years, and we have an massive evacuation of Jewish from Francophone because there is a threat to their lives. Aren't we supposed to help those democracies to sustain themselves in time of challenge?
Is an ISIS sympathizer. So that's largely from the Algerian and from the Arab population that now is growing in France. But France has been a leader in counterterrorism and has a strong role in the Middle East to play. And maybe what you're getting at is really a reinvigoration of the sort of democratic alliance that we had after 9/11. And maybe that's what we need now because we are posed with a huge threat. And countries like Canada, like Australia, like France, like Great Britain, like Germany, like Czech Republic and Scandinavian countries, should all be jumping on board. We should recognize all together that we are facing a different kind of threat, and we need to quell it immediately, otherwise it's going to grow rampantly. And we also have to discuss that some of the other threats have been put on the back burner that should be a main focus of the global community, including the proliferation of nuclear weapons by countries like Iran that really pose an existential threat to the West, Israel, particularly the United States, and look at now sort of a different kind of a grouping than NATO, but a grouping of sort of the free world, the democratic ideals in the free world as a share of the Judeo-Christian ideals, sort of come together and look, you know, things are getting out of control and need to work together.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're talking about Jewish people, but God, what they're doing to Christian everywhere, it's something that, you know, we need to stand up because we have to protect the rights of the Christian everywhere to be free to exist. It's impossible that they try to exclude them. You know, the Jews have been prosecuted for so long because they're different. They have a role in life to work hard and to be the little voice of enlightenment into the world and try to generate some different perspective. And that's the role maybe many don't understand and realize. But the Christians have more than the 1 billion people. They have the Pope, also the Catholic Church. They have the Queen for the Lutheran. I'm not going to mistake on that one. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just say the Christians have the right to worship. And it's so important for us to help recognize what's in play. And by empowering those nations, by empowering France, empowering Canada, making sure that, you know, helping them with their national security, you know, America's work is known. America's power is well known, and the technique, and something that I spoke to before and more, that the difference between us then and us after, it will be the knowledge that we accumulate. And if America can lead us can lead the way in knowledge and understanding, because France's problem are well known to everybody, and Israeli know how to secure airport. They know to do security very well, and many groups and American organizations take them on and say, come on, be a part of our team, and let's secure, you know, this airport like they did in Boston. And sure enough, because, you know, you need to protect and you need the ability to have those professionals in play. And the European right now, they're holding, you know, still, they don't know what to do. I got a phone call from Rome this morning, and they're saying, Orly, you don't even understand what's going on in Italy. Italy is, you know, is immersed with all this kind of jihadists that are moving on, and, you know, people want to start making a difference. So I think that, you know, Mr. Kerry that is going to have an alliance of the willing, Mr. Kerry that is going to talk to other people. He needs to consider also how to empower not just those that, you know, we took them for granted for so many years, took them for, you know, they're secure, they're safe, they know how to do it. No, no, we have to restart all over and clean up and make sure that the people, the children are safe for the next generation. People can travel, but they won't stop us. They won't ruin our economy. You know, when 9/11 happened, and, you know, September 1st reminds us immediately of 9/11. When 9/11 happened, it was the World Trade Center. It wasn't for nothing they were bombing the trade center of the world, you know, apparently, and they succeeded because the global economy collapsed. So we have to work together. And I'm so happy that I had the opportunity to speak with you about that. And by any means, I know that this is a very, very important subject, and it's not easy to speak about it because, it's, you know, there is things that shouldn't be public. But we honor you guys, and we salute you for everything you do. And if there is a Labor Day celebration that I would celebrate, I will celebrate you guys that keep us safe, that keep the world safe, that keep us for the next generation to roll and to rock and roll like America knows to do.
And thank you, Orly. And also, you know, my thoughts are the same with the people of Israel, who are serving as a real example of fortitude and taking on the threat directly and doing it with such a humanitarian way that is way beyond anyone has ever done before in the world. And a great risk to their own people. So I think both Israel and the United States are beacon of democracies, and along with Israel and America and some of the other countries I mentioned, like Canada, I think it is time for us to come together and form sort of a special relationship on security and carrying out and meeting new kinds of threats that we're going to face in the next century.
Yeah, God willing. Yes, sir. And let's hope that we can celebrate the next Labor Day in peace, harmony, and, you know, going on vacation this summer, not being fighting a war of any kind. Thank you so much, sir, for being on my show. I bless you all, and God bless America for giving us such a unit that can create the difference between right and wrong. God bless you, and talk to you soon. Let's go to a break. And we are back, and today on The Impossible Truth, we want to talk about the impossible way that, you know, people have to face life sometimes in the Middle East, especially in Israel. Today is the first day of school in Israel, and the children had to go on, you know, their happy ways and start a new year, something that people all over the world take for granted. But a few weeks back, they were in shelters. A few weeks back, there were sirens running all over Israel. There was a threat, and there was, you know, immediate danger to all of them. And today, they had to put their happy face, their hopes and their dream, put their backpack and go to school. Not many can do that. And in some places in Israel where the border touched the enemy line, the border touches places where people don't really accept the Jewish state. We have incredible organization that go places, go behind, you know, the understanding of how much love, understanding, and caring for world and nature. can make a difference in the world. We have today a special guest, Mr. Russell Robinson, the guy from JNF, the president. And thank you so much, sir, for coming on my show.
Thank you, Orly, for having me on The Incredible Truth and for sharing with all of your listeners the work of Jewish National Fund, but also for your ongoing, nonstop support for the land and the people of Israel.
Thank you so much, sir. Yes, this is a challenge, but JNF beating me by far, trust me. It's not easy to follow your act. You guys are immense. You're wonderful. And you know what I love about the JNF is the love of nature. JNF is an organization, Jewish National Fund, that collects funds all over the world to flourish deserts, to create places where there is no vegetation of any kind. And I leave Mr. Robinson to talk about this, but I wanted to touch base with him from the get-go on the fact on the hard work you guys did in Sderot, where you created shelters underneath, to create a place for a safe haven for Israel a few years back. And I was like wondering what they're doing that in Sderot. And sure enough, this year we needed them so much. So tell me, what was it that made you decide to create such shelter and put so much effort in those places?
Thank you, Orly. You know that our work goes back over 113 years. We are an organization established before the State of Israel was even born. It was the organization in which Jews scattered throughout the world collected coins. At that time, coins were major gift opportunities to repurchase the land of Israel for the Jewish people everywhere. And that, purchase, literally the borders that were drawn in 1948, were drawn by the British as part of land ownership of the Jewish National Fund. And you can only ask yourself what happens if we would have been more unified and more together and be able to buy more land. Could we have saved 6 million Jews? Could we have had more territory? But that is yesterday. But today, the Jewish National Fund is as relevant as ever before. And in Sderot, 7 years ago, we noticed that all those children in Sderot under the tremendous pain of rocket fire from Gaza, of sirens, had no place to play. And so we were like any other organization taking kids out of Sderot for camps. But you know what, Orly? They had to come back. And we said, we're coming back to what? To the same sirens, to the same missiles. So we built a 22,000-square-foot indoor secure playground, the largest one in the world, the only one in the world. It has an indoor soccer field, a movie house, and play areas, and birthday rooms, and computer rooms. And during the war, Orly, over 800 children every day were using our indoor Sderot playground. And you know what was happening there? The sound of laughter, the sound of children.
It's amazing. I remember when I was, seeing it happen, and I knew it's the right thing, and I trust you guys so much that I know that you did it with thinking about life, but I didn't want to think that it can be so close when they needed to use it on a daily basis. This shelter created a difference in a war, and in the life of children. This summer, for them, there wasn't any summer. There was running to shelter all the time, and you guys provided that, and I salute you for that, because not many organizations take the time to think about the future. Usually what they do, they do the, one to day-to-day things, let's help a kid right here and now. But you guys saw it coming, or you wanted to prevent anything from happening to them, and that was incredible. But you guys are, we can talk forever on your organization, because your nature involvement, your green world involvement of what you did in the South, in the Negev, when preserving water, creating new habitat for nature. Because when you have trees, you have nature. You can have you have birds, you have animals, you have reproduction. You create another, and the ecosystem evolve. And you can talk about it better than me, sir, because this is your deal and your baby, and you're doing it very well every day.
Well, Orly, thank you. When you talk about the future, and that's what we try to do at Jewish National Fund, is not thinking about just yesterday, but what is our objectives and what can we accomplish? And in over 15 years, we have added over 12.5% water availability to Israel already. Now, that is, take an equation, about 1.2 million Israelis drinking glass of water every single day. Now, that's incredible. Now, and one thing that Israel is very proud of, but it started out Jewish National Fund 15 years ago, we started reusing water. And you know that Israel reuses 78% of its water. The country next to it, Orly, is Spain at 17%. That means that every drop of water is too precious to waste. And Jewish National Fund, that's what we do every single day. We've added another $100 million campaign to add another 100 million cubic meters of water to the land of Israel. And we intend to do that and accomplish for another 1.2 million Israelis to have water every day. So the great crisis of the water is not a catastrophe because of the work of Jewish National Fund. And our work in the Negev, as part of our Blueprint Negev campaign and our North, our Go North campaign in the Galilee, we are the leaders of bringing 500,000 people down to the Negev to work together with nature and nature reserves, but also to bring populations to 60% of the land of Israel. And Jewish National Fund has done that through a 15-kilometer river walk that we've created in Beersheba, an amphitheater. The work that we're doing all the way down from the Arava all the way up to Beersheba, we touch the entire land and people of Israel.
I think you're doing wonderful. And when people think about water, it's not only the water we're drinking; it's the ability to grow, vegetables, to grow doing your food, serve food to the people of the area by supplying them with water. It's such a long range, and that's why the Israelis are blessed to have the Jewish National Fund working so hard. But the world is also blessed, and I can see the time where your organization will cross the milestone of being only for Israel's sake and would go global, because the world needs such an organization that is predicting, to predict the future, create a plan, and also go places and create a well-being for nature. And when the movement of Greens is working so hard, I think they need to take a page from your book, because you guys are doing it. You're walking the walk while they're talking the talk. So I think that, a day will come soon where the Jewish National Fund will be, the Jewish Global Fund, because it will be for everybody. And maybe it will be a nice thing to think about, I know that, it's our perspective is always limited. We have war and peace constantly, and we don't have the time to restart and generate new ideas sometimes. But this is the time in history where the global arena is in play. This is a time that all organizations need to start working together. And I don't care if they call it, Jewish or Christian or any other organization that creates something for well-being of the world, not against the world, the well-being of the world. If we start joining, hands, we can create it. And, they talk about the environment for so long, but we never actually felt it. With your organization, we can feel the difference, because when we walk in the street and there are trees and there is green and, the ecosystem is happy, that you have a future. And your organization is the one that makes a difference. That's something that I have to recognize today. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I think that we need to recognize that you have in September 12th, you have a very, very important event that if you can talk about it, maybe people can listen and understand what the next plan is. But on September 12th, you have a world event that is the JNF is funding. Would you tell me about it more?
Yes, and on September the 12th, we start our international conference in Los Angeles, California this year. It's going to be a conference that runs all the way through Monday, where we're closing on Monday, September the 15th, with Foreign Minister Yvette Lieberman is coming for a rally for Israel on Monday, September the 15th. At the Beverly Hills Hotel. Our conference is really an unbelievable conference. You can go on jnf.org and find all about it, and you can even sign up on an app and be able to listen in to many of the plenaries, and we'll have it also filmed and after the conference be able to share with everybody. But Orly, we're going to have over 200 teenagers from the Los Angeles area. We're going to be with Counting Our Shabbat, with about 500 college students from the whole area and around the country. We're going to have about 1,000 people that are coming in from all over. We're going to have all of our partners from Israel that will be there. And it's really talking about what, you know, the impossible truth is not so impossible. It's the impossible truth to talk about positive Israel. And that is where you're talking about the global world, Orly. We want to... All the Jewish National Fund keeps talking about is Israel making the world a better place. And if we keep talking about water resources that we're providing in Israel for the region and the production around the world, drip irrigation used everywhere, invented in a place called Israel, making the world a better place. And if we could talk about all of the great advancements in technology and farming, you know, you go to Southeast Asia, well, already every year, part of the Jewish National Fund, powered by Jewish National Fund, down in the Arava, a place that only gets 2 inches of rain a year, yet produces 50% of the melons for exported from Israel. We have 1,500 college students from Southeast Asia a year learning in Israel how to be farmers, to go back home, to be able to take that and be able to bring food onto the plate of their family. Israel making the world a better place. That's the Jewish National Fund story. That's what's powered from Jewish National Fund. And so people can learn about us on our website, go on our Facebook page, tweet us, and even hashtag powered by JNF. And learn all about us. And our conference is just an extension of bringing that as we open up our campaign for 2015.
It's amazing. And you tap on something very important. Think about those Chinese that can bring food to the table because you can save water and you teach them how to save water in the Jewish National Fund. It's amazing. It's humongous grace before God. If there is anything you do when you help the world, you're bringing grace of God on the world. And there is not enough world to express the wonder and how amazing it can be if they only let us be, because Israel is so little, and we need, of course, we need more land to start to flourish and work and analyze. And you know, one of the days that I visited down south in the Negev, I saw how you created plants for investigating how tomato can grow upwards. You know, like trees instead of, you know, on the low level like bushes. And people from all over the world are starting to come and look at this innovation. Because tomato, you know, they used to have them, you know, you have a certain amount of land and you have to build, you know, you have the bushes of the tomatoes. But then all of a sudden, the tomato become a tree and you double the amount of growth that you have in a small piece of land. It's amazing.
Well, you know, we grow those tomatoes, for instance, in the Arava that are exported. Those tomatoes grow on with hydroponics, without even soil. They grow up the rail, as you said, straight up, and it grows without soil. So we could even take that water that we're watering those tomatoes with and be able to utilize it from fish farms to olive groves to fig farms. Now, down in the Arava, where you were there and you saw in the desert, 2 inches of rain a year, and that rain comes all in one day. And yet, 50% of the melons, 25% of the fish that is consumed in Israel, 55% of the tomatoes exported come from that place in the Arava. That's the ingenuity of Israel. That's the ingenuity of the Jewish National Fund.
Absolutely, and I salute to that. And you know what? You come with all the receipt for that. I saw that. I've been there. I lived for it. I know you guys are a real good organization. And when, you know, there are so many flags running around, you know, and as people say, this organization votes. No, I vote JNF. I vote JNF to support you, to sustain you, and to make sure that you have hundreds of years of work, because whatever you bring to the world, that you explore in Israel, that we are the exploration part, because you're doing it from a grace of God, you know, motivation, that you want to preserve the Jewish state, and then you bring it back to the world 20,000 times bigger. So this is an excellent, you know, role that you play, and you got the place to say that it's worth a place to be among people. Thank you so much, Russell, for being on my show. I'm honored. I'm thankful for you, and I hope that we can talk always in peaceful and look at you know, in wonder again how tomato can grow. God bless you. Thank you so much.
God bless you, Orly, and all of your listeners. And again, they can learn more by going on to JNF.org, Facebook or Twitter, calling us. We want to have people from throughout the world connecting with us as we do, as you said, the work of making the world a better place. And thank you for allowing me and the story of Jewish National Fund to be told on your radio show.
Thank you so much for coming. That's my blessing for you. And God bless you. Take care. Take care. God bless you. And let's go to a break. And this is a little segment about the Iron Dome, you know, the Iron Dome that was actually the miracle of this summer, the miracle that God gave the people the wisdom to create, and with the cooperation, of course, with United States of America, who was, you know, who was wonderful in creating all things that make a difference. You see, defense, security, life of the man needs to be guarded, and there was so many wise people who said it before. We have to, democracy is something you have to defend constantly. It's not something that you said, hey, you put on the, you know, on the shelf and said, there you go, we got a democracy. No. And like in France, people were running away now because France is not safe. People don't like to do business. You know, if you had those music, the ones that the romantic travail, you know, and you go to work and you go to travel, and excuse me, sometimes I go into half to a different language because, you know, the world is global, and sometimes you encounter people from other and they teach you different languages and you learn their expression. But all of this, all this happiness that we created before, you know, all this vision needs to be protected. This is, okay, let's think about it in that perspective. It's that phase that we are in the protective mode of the world we created. Sure enough, they don't like us there. They don't like us to be free. They don't like us to liberate the woman. Why should a woman be liberated if they can enslave her and have 20 wives? Why to have women, you know, running around, speaking on a podium, making effort to save the children, when you have, you know, you can pit for her to cook and, you know, throw her, you know, a bone once in a while, and, I don't know, in a dress or something, or jewelry. They like jewelry. All the girls like jewelry. But the idea is people have to understand that we are in the protective mode. People come and think that, you know, oh, they start again. This is the end of all time. And everybody is talking about the end, you know, like God called them yesterday and told them, hey, this is the time. No, I don't think so. I think that God gave us the book of all books, the good book, with all the idea that we can put, all, you know, mind, imagination of people that can say to you, you can do bad, and the book of good says, you know, you cannot get away with that. people say, oh, you can do that. No, the good books say, you see, they tried it before, didn't work. Because most of the books in the book of the stories in the Bibles are about situation that people say, well, why we, this is the holy book if there, you know, a situation that we know about and it's livelihood of man. Yeah, that's exactly, it's that paper that tells you that experience didn't work well for that. And who was the smart man that says, you know, you have to learn from the experience of others because you don't have the time to make the mistakes of yours, you know, because you run out of time before you know it. And sure enough, you can repeat it. So you learn from the mistake of others. And the book of the Bible tells you the mistake of others. And the mistake before God that, you know, you cannot, you know, commence to repent when there is like the promised land, poof, before Moses' eyes. He said, you know, you can only see it, but you cannot walk because you didn't obey God's wish. And, you know, and we can take it in a way that, you know, we learn how nature of mankind goes and understand that the protection of our livelihood very well depends on our moral values, on the way we create a life, and a way of protecting the one that we care for, and protecting democracies, protecting the world safety net of, you know, between travel and businesses is really our most concern. Because if they touch our businesses and they make us go, you know, slower, go, you know, we don't explore more our horizons because we are afraid to go, they win. And, you know, the emancipation of mankind stops. Emancipation needs to, you know, to roll constantly. We need to go on. We need to explore. You know, Woman Leaps once, you know, I'm changing the subject and you're here now, and sometimes you might not grasp the idea, but trust me, wait a second. I will say something that will make you think again. Women Leap was something that, you know, we created, you know, in order for us to emancipate. And sure enough, we found the whole load of work on our shoulders. Men are wonderful, but why to work so hard if the woman can go, take care of the house, take care of the kids, send them to school, go to work, you know, do a wonderful salary, have to come home, take care of the children, go on. Yeah. Hey, that wasn't the Women Leap idea. The Women Leap idea is give us a place on the table. And right now, in the global form of events, we need a seat on the table. But I want to tell you something. Those women that get the seat on the table, you better respect that. Because once you go on before a United Nation, like the ambassador of the U.S., and talk, and she had a chance to speak in front of the Russian representative about the situation in Ukraine, and you laugh, the ambassador of the U.S. laugh at the Russian comment when he said, don't push us. How can you progress? Women, there is no silliness in conversation when you talk world affair. You need to be serious about what you're doing and what you're standing for. If you care about the world, you're working on the United Nations, and you start laughing on the most incredible risk that the world can have. It's a world global war, you know, that is endangering everybody in Ukraine. And you are laughing at them. Well, that's where the men can say, oh, she didn't get it. No, we get it. She did it. The women get it. We have the right to be on the table, but we should respect it. And we should respect every man that come and across of us in a challenging time and open the hearts. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of a, you know, message they're saying. They're saying a message that we don't like. They're saying a message that we don't respect. Their message also something that we want to avoid. But we have the capacity to understand that they have the right to send a message, and nobody has the right to an entitlement on the world message. So I'm calling, you know, if there is a red flag to call, I said, hey, guys, this was a red flag, because I think that if there was a comprehensive sitting, you know, suddenly I saw finally an ambassador of the Russian, and the Russian that were talking about the issue, creating some kind of a dialogue, you know, in a way that we don't really understand sometimes, and we don't respect maybe in the rhetoric. But we had the chance to take it to the next level, the leap of faith, the leap of us taking the world to the next level in cooperation, is to think how we can excel, not how you can ruin the other side. How can you destroy the other side is not going to help us succeed. We need to have the blessing of cooperation. We need to have the blessing of brotherhood. We need to share knowledge to grow food for everybody in the world. There are so many hungry people in Africa. We still are spreading it too slowly, and the savage are starting to get the best of them. And, you know, there is a whole story, very, very, you know, not so sympathetic to tell online. And I don't tell it because I don't feel comfortable of, you know, in this kind of rhetoric. But the sample is like this. If you, you know, if you don't feed somebody, you start eating from each other, right? And Africa has been eating from each other for quite a while. And we get, and they got the worst part of the, you know, of the deal so far. I don't know why they got it. And I think that it's time to change it, because if we change our responsibility for the world, if we understand that this Africa is our, this is our global world, if we work together to help them get some more food, get, you know, there are so many companies, Israeli companies, that go to Africa and help them create a little farm so they can create food for the table. But we need to understand that we're their territories, we're their global, we're their grounds, that it's so much fruitful. You know, that place is fruitful. We can create, a humongous amount of food for the world. The center of the world food center is done, you know, it's not clear in the people's mind. And you know, Africa was not touched in many ways, but touched in different ways that we don't like. But we need to create, you know, if they are jobless, yes, they are jobless, but they have the grounds to come and make a difference. And, you know, the JNF doing it everywhere. And there is a big company that's doing it in Africa, but it's too slow, and global effort needs to come to play, because there is a little situation where the African, they don't like to destroy God's creation. They rather not eat than to cut the tree. Sometimes, you know, if you think about people who are really green, those are people who believe that, you know, they're afraid to cut tree, because if they destroy nature, God will punish them. And, you know, I can relate to the understanding of preserving the nature. But if you complement nature, if you take the nature and work with it to improve the world, and if you teach them how to do it, we might have a different way to create a new center for food in the world. We create a better tomorrow for African, and we maybe will be stopping the savages that's going around the world right now, and they're going and, you know, and chopping every good tree that there is of, you know, of humankind, though. Not the nature kind, the humankind. So I think that we have talk about this, and God bless you. I'm going to take a break, and then we'll talk about something else. Let's go to break now, Doug. And we are back. That was a really funny part, and I needed to place it in here someplace. This is Labor Day weekend for everybody, and people understand how hard it is to make a living these days. And for some reason, all the big companies, couldn't care less. All the banks couldn't care less. There are so many good people that cannot get the loan from the bank. Because, we all in the world, as the Prime Minister, the new young Prime Minister of Italy said, we're in the world, we all work hard to save the banks, and you would like to see the banks work hard to save the world. And for some reason, labor is not such a something you can take for granted. You know, work, good laborers is hard to find. Good work is definitely harder to find. And the more important thing is good pay. What's wrong with the good pay? Why people are thinking that, we can keep people low, miserable, and, and happy? It's not happening anymore, I guess, because this new world created the new situation when transparency and the calling of the urgency of taking care of the abuse of big corporate America, big corporate China, big corporate Germany, or any other big corporation, Israel included, that take advantage of the working class. Working class is not slavery. It's not something you take for granted. They come and put their life aside for you, and they serve you. They come every day, rain or shine, and you should respect them, honor them, and give them what they deserve. Of course, if they do the job. I don't like those organizations that come around and say, hey, pay me more, without mentioning anything, and they take all the excess, and then they create this big building and say, oh, we work for the labor, and, we help you out, get your own. No, they don't. They still get the low minimum wage, and they cannot pay their bills. They cannot go and have fun. They cannot go on vacation in Monte Carlo, of course. They have to work hard. And it's about time. It's about time we start shaping up our world in a way that it's just. Justice is not something that you just talk about. Justice is something you create. You create a mode. If I see so many are big, wonderful-looking, great-looking, big malls, and I see all those slaves, he called them slaves. I'm so sorry. It's like people will get insulted maybe for that. But, I see the labor. When they get abused, I'm really astonished. I remember those days that every time that my mate will come home, I would say, hey, I'm so happy to see you. Without you, my life is not the same. And she knew I was talking the truth, because my life is not the same without the help that people help, the babysitter that takes care of our children, the teacher that teach our children, the bus driver that drives so hard, every morning, 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock, it's freezing cold, the gas is on the bus, taking our children to school while we go run back to our, warm bed sometimes. So I think that this Labor Day, it's not only to honor the workplace, it's also to shake up these people who took everybody for granted. Of course, everybody is to blame. Of course, we all participate, enjoy. We had a part of it, you can't blame us, you had a part of it. Yeah, of course. It doesn't mean that it's all right. It means it's about time that we draw the line and say, this is it, guys. Let's work. We don't want the big building with a big rent that we need to pay you this and, get the food out of people's, mouths just because we want to pay for monumental, colossal ego trip of some investors. No, we want the simple, nice, country-like, good place where you can shop, you can have a life, and your man in the grocery shop can be smiling at us and bring us this stuff, help us to the car, while knowing that he's paid well, you buy in the right place and you have a good life. That's important for everybody to ask, you know, to work on. And you know, life is not easy. Life is not easy for anybody, especially in time of challenge. You know, people are having, you know, to travel from places to places, getting sick in the way. And for all those people that work hard and work their heart out to make a difference, I send all my love to all the sick people that work so hard, that got sick. I send my blessing for them to heal fast. To all those who run the risk and protect this world, I send my love. And let's go to a break. And we are back to conclude this segment of The Impossible Truth, where we were talking about the stuff that hurts us, the stuff that challenges us, and the stuff that make us pray for God's grace. Remember, there is a God and it's not us. We need to remember that. We need to remember that there is a solution to every problem if we only want to. There is a solution to every dilemma if we look at it right. And I know that in the Middle East we have to have a negotiation between Israel and the Palestinian Authority again. And yes, they want everything, but I just want to tell, for the sake of all things, Jerusalem is off the table. Jerusalem belongs to the world of peace. Jerusalem is peace. And nobody that holds arm against humankind in any sort of way can have the right and can be worthy before God to hold such entitlement on the holy city of Jerusalem. The holy city of Jerusalem needs to be a safeguard for the world to come and pray before God, because this is a challenging time and we need God so hard. We need to pray. We need to have to know that there is a place where we can pray. You get to pray. You can come or not, but once you know there is a place where people pray, you feel better. It doesn't matter if you believe or not believe, but you know that if somebody believes that there is a good in the world, this is already a good, better world. So Jerusalem is off the table for all those good people who work so hard around the negotiation table and forgot Jerusalem. I'm reminding you, you know, there is a 181 resolution that mentioned the Arab state. There was no mentioning of Palestinian state. Palestinian state is the territory they talked about, and it's divided in Jordan. So try to go and talk to them first before you come and have so many requests. And of course you can bomb, of course you can threat, of course you want $300 million to pay your mercenary of 30,000 men in Gaza. Is the world is there? Is it normal to pay the dudes after they bombard us? I don't think so. So you guys have to come up with a different plan. I love you so all, and I will work hard to make sure that there is every child in Gaza will have a life, and have the wife will have a wonderful place that where she can go, fix her hair, and grow, you know, a wonderful family. But please, those mercenary in the gates get loose. You know, they have to get, you know, a different place to leave, or they just step to the gate, their affairs. It was a challenging show today. It was a challenging show because people have so much in play, and I am a person like everybody else. It's not easy to be a person, a woman, in this life and in a place far away sometimes from the real home where it's in your heart, but this is what it is. So I give it to you, and as always, I give it all. So God bless you all. I hope that you have a wonderful Labor Day. I hope you deserve, you know, better. I hope you'll get what you deserve. and I hope God will shine some grace on us. God bless you all, and thank you, Doug, for helping me up. You know, it's part of the show. You're so important. And thank you to my guests. God bless you. God bless the world.